the wishbone up over here, the notes, because I can't see it and us at the same time. Show notes.
In the soundboard.
Yeah, I got that already. That's the first thing I think.
Forget the recording thing. He already opened the soundboard.
I've got the soundboard up, yeah. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 541.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and, of course, by people like you. You out there listening right now. People like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. That's who you are. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, I gotta say, we've been doing this for several weeks now. And we haven't commented on it yet, so the listeners don't get this behind-the-scenes look, right? We've been using StreamYard, which is a video thing, rather than our usual, like, Zoom that we've used or whatever we used to use in the past. We've used everything. And that means we actually can, like, see each other, which is so, it's interesting. It doesn't really affect our show other than I can, like, actually wave my arms like Animal in the Muppet Show while I'm talking, and you could actually see me doing that. So what has it been like for your end to have, like, visual contact while we do this after all these years?
I think regular listeners could probably pick out the show where this first happened, because we acted much sillier than we had in previous shows, because we could see each other and we were trying to make each other laugh and stuff. So, and probably that was about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Not hard to detect if you're a regular listener to the show when that took place.
This is true.
It is good because we can look at each other for kind of verbal cues about stuff instead of doing the listen and the dreaded kind of audio wag interfering with that process about anticipating when the other person is going to speak or not speak. So.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've had so many problems over the years, and we both know it's never been either one of us's fault. It's just been that when there's some kind of weird lag thing been going on, you can't tell. If there's no visual cue, you're just having to kind of guess, and yeah, we step on each other and stuff. But yeah, I think it has been better. So, and I think StreamYard's audio has been a lot better too than what we've dealt with in the past too. So this has been working real well. Like we always say, we are in a constant effort to keep things at the top quality. And, you know, it also means that at some point when we feel like it, once there's a reason, we don't make a reason right now, but once there's a reason, we can do the occasional live video show again that, you know, people seem to enjoy those too. But I'm not going to want to, and I know you're not going to want to do one until there's a, like if basketball season was going on, we were about to play Kentucky or something, or, you know, when football season, maybe the barbecue show. I don't know if they want to watch us eat barbecue. That might be a reason not to do it. Did we do it last year on video? I feel like we did.
I feel like it was on video last year. I was eating on TV last year.
Yeah, yeah. And I know, I love when we get the occasional comment from somebody who's not really familiar with the show, and they're like, but you were eating on the air. And we're like, that's the whole point. We're eating on the air. That's like the entire raison d'etre of the show, man. Yeah, so, yeah. All right, well, anyway. Let's see what we have on tap tonight. I'm trying to put the soundboard split across two screens so that it doesn't cover everything up, but it's really weird because I've got three columns on one screen and two columns on the other. So I have to go to this screen to do...
I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly.
But I have to go to this screen to go...
Blame yourself.
Right, so they're on two different screens, so that's true.
How will we survive?
That's always the question. So we are in the off season now, and there's not been a whole lot going on. I know that there's been more goings than comings, right? And we did a show. Oh, in fact, that was the thing I was going to do. There was a sound effect I was going to get, but we did a show called Portals and what was it? pods and portals and pods, oh my, where we talked about the pod system and we talked about the portals. And it seemed like a lot of people have been using the portals lately. So is there any latest news, right? I think that we, I feel like we gained somebody from SEMO, right? A DB?
Yes, we all did. Right. His name's like Bradarius Knighton. He is a safety primarily, but also potentially a nickel back from South Missouri State. He is a grad transfer, so a guy with a lot of playing experience, kind of an all-conference guy to, you know, at a smaller school, you know, a 1AA FCS level school, but a veteran, a guy who, you know, you watch the video, he anticipates well, he's pretty physical, he makes plays, and the guy's played a lot of football. And so I think it's probably a good thing. It's not a guy, you know, and so my mindset for people when I say we signed this guy as a grad transfer is think Jordan Peters replacement, right? Mm-hmm. Jordan Peters was a versatile piece on defense that could play multiple positions as a backup, knew where to be, made plays when he was out there, but he wasn't a star, he wasn't a starter, but he was an effective depth piece on defense the last several years, and that's what this guy is.
And SEMO is a school up here in this area. I'm in southwestern Illinois, so southeastern Missouri must be fairly close to us. Therefore, you know, it just kind of makes sense that they would be. And I think that like the schools around here play them. And so, yeah, they're, that's kind of the thing here, you know, is that there's just a lot of small to medium sized colleges in Illinois and Missouri, more than there are in like Alabama, Georgia, probably, or about the same as Georgia. But anyway, yeah, so they've got a pretty good reputation anyway. And then I could see them having a good player that would come over and be able to. So therefore the, that means I got to hit the, pod. I'm going to cut out a little piece of that for the future. But there you go. There's your pod theme for this week and the next time.
Portal.
Portal
theme. Portal yeah, there's theme. Your we portal have a different theme. Pod theme.
Yeah, I got to have a pod theme now. I don't know what it'll be. I guess it'll be something from Phantom Menace, the pod race. I don't know.
Okay. So thank you for playing that. This important to think about kind of what Auburn's been doing here in the transfer portal the last couple of weeks. And I think what they've really been doing is kind of adding veterans who could come in and step in and play kind of a contributor role right away, right? Mm-hmm. They're not trying to go – they could have said, we're not going to bring in those guys. We're going to just play our freshmen in those spots and let them get all this play time. But that's risky, right? We've seen that work and backfire before on SEC teams. And, you know, the same thing with the defensive tackle, nose guard type we signed from UAB last week. He can back up Truesdale at nose guard, but, you know, he's a grad transfer senior, just like this guy is. You know, they're not going to be here long term. They're depth pieces with experience who could come in and play in the SEC right away, play 20 snaps a game and be effective and not be overwhelmed and stuff. And you're not damaging their development by playing them like out of position or when they're not fully ready or that kind of stuff like you might with a freshman. Or, you know, potentially risking the whole defense by having somebody who didn't know what they were doing out there go to the wrong spot on a key play. So, it makes a lot of sense to me that the way they're doing this, and it, I think Justin Ferguson talked about this on his podcast this weekend. I thought it was really smart that it's, you know, it's kind of a win games now kind of strategy, right? That they're not in a, you know, like it's going to make a huge difference, but these are the kind of things you would do if you fill in around the gaps if you were trying to win now, right? Because you want to make the roster as complete as possible for this year. So anyhow, that's the strategy piece. And then the other football rumor that's out there is that one of the LSU quarterbacks is in the transfer portal, TJ Finley, the guy that started against us and got replaced.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that other than just we need another halfway decent backup quarterback, and they're going to tell him he's going to beat out Bo Nix. He's not going to beat out Bo Nix. But didn't we used to eat at T.J. Finley in Auburn? I feel like we did. Every time I hear that name, I think, didn't they make a good sandwich or something?
The chicken parm sandwich place?
Yeah, I know. People talk about that.
So but also he's only a freshman, right? So, you know, maybe he's better than our backup quarterback right now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And maybe he genuinely pushes Bo Nix, maybe not. But also, you know, maybe he competes with Demetrius Davis and this high school guy that we've got, you know, recruited right now to be the quarterback of the future in a year or two, right? That those guys are competing for the quarterback of the future job. And so I think, you know, they're looking at this and saying, you know, after Bo Nix, what have we really got at that position, right? We got Demetrius Davis, and we want to put our eggs in one basket right now.
well, right now we have Bo Nix and Tank, and if the two of them go down, we're 3-9. You know,
mm-hmm. That's right. So I think it's interesting. I think he has some potential, and you know, is a guy that had a lot of big offers to give out high school, and it's interesting to me that they're even considering a quarterback. But I see it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I kind of want a quarter. I mean, I kind of want a running back a little bit more, but depth is good all across there for sure. Yeah.
I mean, the big guy that's out there right now on the football side is Kaufman, this freshman safety from Vanderbilt that we talked about last week, who's a transfer portal guy, who's like a really good player. I think a lot of schools want him, and it looks like he's coming out of Auburn in Texas, and he's going to decide Wednesday. So.
Oh, okay. We'll keep an eye out for that then. Yeah, what does he play? I forgot.
Safety. Okay. But he's a guy. He was a true freshman last year. Only played a few games, and he got COVID and missed the rest of the season. And so I think they feel like that's the guy that can come in and be a multi-year starter. You know, they'd be like first guy off the bench this year probably, or then they could, you know, maybe even he could start and they could move, you know, what's his name, back to nickel. So,
what is Knighton going to play? What is Knighton going to play? The SEMO guy.
He's going to play backup safety. Like, he's going to, again, Jordan Peters was kind of the first safety off the bench to be a reserve, but a veteran guy who could come in and play either safety spot and be in the right position. Because right now, you know, our safety, Chris Thompson from Texas, transferred away. And so we have like three freshman safeties coming in. But other than that, the backup at safety right now is not good. There's some walk-ons in second string, I think. So so that's why Knighton was an important player, that we needed another body there, a guy that could play minutes in an SEC game.
Yeah.
Not be a star, but just come in and be a, you know, kind of a veteran guy that plays 15, you know, 20 snaps a game and knows what he's doing. And he seems good in the open field, good tackler stuff. So
okay.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, so Knighton and Finley we're keeping an eye on, and then Kaufman we're going to keep an eye on for the middle of the next week. Yeah. Sounds good. What is going on in and by the way, I do want to keep looking for a running back, too, because I feel like we need one more back before we
get into the season. No, I agree with you. I think there's a couple of guys out there, but you're right. We need a good running back. We, you know, but also a guy that can accept that Tank is the man, too.
Yeah, so. That's the hard part is you need somebody good enough that you'd want him, but that's not going to think, why would I go there when they've got this other guy that's clearly the starter and I'm going to be scrambling for backup with Shivers and Barrett and all that, you know? So yeah, no kidding. The sense that I get right now, and I'm not trying to make a prediction or anything, but just the sense that I get about the state of the personnel in our program is that they are really having to work hard just to keep us at the same talent level we've been at the last few years, just because of people leaving and graduating and stuff. But they are, for the most part. That's good. It's just there's been a lot of attrition, even more than normal, obviously, this year. And maybe this is just a one-off. We'll see. But they're having to work really hard just to kind of replace what we're losing currently. And so I'd like to think we were bringing in new bullets for the gun, but right now I feel like we're just replacing the ones we already had that are missing. So do you have a sense, in terms of personnel, not scheme, not coaches, anything else, where do you think we stand right now compared to like a year ago at this time or 6 months ago at this time in terms of personnel?
I mean, defensively, I think it's probably about the same, honestly. We've lost a few guys, but we brought in some other guys. I think the two big transfers on defense weren't there in the spring. The Ekeliota guy from Northwestern is a big-time edge rusher. He can play end or outside linebacker. That guy's going to make a difference. And then Drayshon Miller is a cornerback from West Virginia. Both those guys are going to play a lot.
And the new nose guard.
That's right. And then the nose guard we got from Pegues moving over too. I think he's going to play. And then Lee Hunter, obviously had a really strong spring. He's a big time freshman recruit. I think is going to play a lot at defensive line. So I think, on defense, honestly, I think we're fine. We've had some players transfer away, but some of the guys in the secondary who transferred away weren't going to play. They were going to be the eighth or ninth guys, 10th guys back there. Mm-hmm. So, and I think they realized that. Some of them were. Chris Thompson was a loss, but some of the other guys were not so much.
So
some of the guys on the defensive line, I think it was a little bit of a scheme thing maybe too, where they didn't like how they fit in that. But
right.
I think we're about the same on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, obviously we lost guys to the NFL. They didn't transfer away on receiver.
I think receiver is the main thing, right?
Yeah. So That's the biggest spot where the talent differential is big right now, but that wasn't a transfer thing or a Augusta Harsin thing.
It would have been really interesting though to see what Harsin and Bobo and company could have done with a year with Seth Williams. I think that it would have been very good for Seth Williams as well as for Auburn.
Yeah, no, yes, you'd love to see what they would do with that kind of talent, what they could have brought out of him and stuff. So
yeah, and he would have been drafted a lot higher too, maybe if he had a year of some good route coaching and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So
it's true.
What about in basketball? What's the deal with Scoot?
So the big, he's a junior going into his high school senior year. Scoot Henderson is this recruit that Auburn's been, linked to for a long time. And the rumor, a month ago was he was going to do that reclassification thing. So if we go from a junior to a senior and then sign with Auburn right now. And that was the hot rumor. But he acted like that wasn't a done deal, that he was still looking around. He wasn't committed to Auburn even. He was still kind of an open thing in his mind. And the rumor, today basically is that he's going to the G League, which is like the NBA's minor league. And that's pretty frustrating, I think. I think a lot of Auburn fans want, even if he didn't come this year, to come next year and be kind of a five-star guard coming in next year with a lot of ability would be really great. So And if people have forgotten this, we've had so many big-time players that we were recruiting or that came through Auburn in the last 3 or 4 years. But a couple of years ago, there was another recruit that was one of the top recruits in the country named Gerald Green, who, was down to like Auburn and one other school. And he went to the G League, and now
Memphis.
He's in the draft, and he's going to be a top 10 pick or whatever. So, that's a guy that almost came to Auburn, and he's talked about how he almost came to Auburn. So, it's frustrating, but we'll see. I don't think it's a done deal yet, but it's what it is, I guess.
The G stands for Got Another Auburn Signee.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when Terry Bowden used to sign all those star players and then they'd go off and play baseball or something?
Yes.
Terry specialized in signing scholarship offers to baseball star pitchers that happened to play football on the side. That was his signature move.
Well, I mean, our lesson back then, if you weren't around then, was signing day doesn't matter. Signing day hype doesn't matter. What matters is who gets on campus, because he also signed guys that didn't qualify too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So there was a lot of both of those. So
That's the lesson,
the hard-earned, bitter lesson, was the only recruits that matter are the ones that make it on a campus.
Yeah, Terry signed three types of players. They'd stand in three lines at the registration desk. So are you going to Major League Baseball? Oh, no. Oh, Are you flunking out? No? Oh, you're actually going to play with us. Oh, welcome aboard, sir. Congratulations. Yeah. So about a third of our class would work out every year. That was, if you wonder how we ended up 3-8 in 1998, I think that was a big part of it, is that we didn't have those players. So speaking of Terry Bowden, this is a nice, as good of a segue as I'm going to find. You know, our listeners maybe know that we've been working for a while now. In fact, we started a little over a year ago, working on this new book, We Believed, Volume 1. We haven't talked much about it, but I'll just let a little bit of the cat's paw out of the bag. We're working on Volume 1 of We Believed and the sort of the skeleton.
A 12-part series.
Well, if every part was what the one I'm working on now was, it would be, okay? It's Volume 1 because it's going to be so freaking huge, but it's, you know, our listeners know that we've done 8 episodes. Yeah, we've totally done 8 episodes of our 10-part series, We Believe, on audio. And if you want to hear them, they're in the podcast feed somewhere, but the easiest way is just go to www.auwishbone.com, because the bottom half of the page basically is just direct links to those 8 episodes in order. That's the easiest way. You can do it on your phone, on Safari or whatever, or just go there. But anyway, this is our documentary on what it's been like to be an Auburn fan all these years. And then it's kind of alternates between our reactions as fans and students and everything with what was actually happening with the team. And so we have a lot of interviews and stuff like that. Well, I put a lot of like game audio and stuff in the audio version. Well, John had the idea that we need to make a book, which is turned into 2 books just because it's so big, out of that basic idea. But I didn't want to just do a print version of the audio. I thought this is our chance to bring in a lot more cool stuff. And so we are like 85% done with it now. I mean, you know, we did the first. There's going to be 5 sections, just like the first 5 episodes of the podcast. So this one's going to cover the first 5 sections. And we did the first 3 last spring and summer. And we're working on 4 and 5 now. And I'm working on 5 right now. And it's just the Terry Bowden era. Part 5 of this book. This book's going to basically be Pat Dye and Terry Bowden. Volume 2 will be Tommy Tuberville, Gene Chizik, and Gus. And then the future, you know, which is the 2 episodes we haven't finished yet are Gus and the future. But now, see, it's a good thing we waited on Gus, because we have an entire complete episode now on Gus. We won't be doing a work in progress, you know, it'll be a done deal like all the others. So anyway, what I'm really getting at is the Terry Bowden section I've been working on is currently over 27,000 words just on Terry Bowden's era, 50 pages already on Google Docs, and it's still not done. I am currently at halftime of the 1997 Iron Bowl. That's where I was this afternoon when my wife came home and we started cooking dinner. I was right at halftime of the 97 Iron Bowl. So I've been working on it all weekend. I got us through all, 97 has taken days. But anyway, so this is, I was just saying earlier on Twitter and all, if this book, John, if this book does not stand up as the definitive history of the Terry Bowden era at Auburn, I don't know who's going to come along behind us and do something more comprehensive than this, or why they would. Right. I mean, are there sports reporters and sports writers? What's the guy that did Season on the Brink, you know, about Bobby Knight and all?
Einstein.
Yeah. Is he like waiting to come behind us and do? No, this is the definitive Terry Bowden story right here, man.
But I was going to say Terry Bowden himself coming in behind us to write the Terry Bowden story.
That might be a fiction book. But anyway, hey ho, hey. But I fully realize, John, I fully realize that what is going to sell Volume 1 is that it's going to be an account of the entire Pat Dye 12 years. It's going to have the first time ever game in it. It's going to have all the great 86, 87, 88, 89. It's going to have 83 in it, you know, all that. That's what's going to sell the book. But when people get past that, there's going to be like another 50 pages, well, 60, of Terry Bowden. And it's going to be the most comprehensive play-by-play, game-by-game, scandal-by-scandal our reaction by our reaction with your brother and me and you talking about it kind of woven into it. I've got quotes from Sports Illustrated. I've got quotes from David Housel and Paul Feinbaum. I've got stuff from Ron Franklin. I mean, I'm just digging everywhere. This thing's going to be, and I'm going to go back and do that for the die stuff too, when it's all done, you know, but I just feel really good about this book. I think it's going to be something special. So, I mean, the amount of work we're putting into it, especially, I mean, I feel like we put a lot of work into the first two books that we did, Season of Our Dreams and Decades of Diamonds, but this is like another level.
It is, and I think that was, the, you know, people forget, there was like a magical time, 93 and 94, in Auburn fandom. It was,
yeah,
it was a crazy fun time, and it's a very interesting time, too.
Well, just look, all right, just over the last couple of days, I've had to go through in depth over 97, Damian Craig, it all revolves around Damian Craig, right? Virginia, LSU, Florida, that Mississippi State game. Oh, I got something to say about that in just a second. Georgia, 45-34, the DeMontre Carter game. The 97 Iron Bowl by itself, right? The Tennessee game in the Georgia Dome, and then the Clemson game in the bowl. Every one of those games, I've given at least 2 to 3 pages of in-depth research, play-by-play, you know, calling out, you know, quotes, everything. And so this 97 is just a season that I don't think people, you know, you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, that was a good year, and Damian Craig had a good year, but there were so many games that season that I wanted to blow through them. I wanted to just like, I'm going to get through this chapter. And then I'm like, well, no, I got to talk about that. Well, I got to talk about that. And then when I would go in and start looking at the breakdown of those games, like here's an example. I wasn't even going to really mention the 1997 Mississippi State game. And then I went in and because part of the reason was I missed the first half. I had a flat tire on the way over from Atlanta. I missed the first half of that game. I went into the play-by-play of that game and started watching some game video of it. You know that Damian Craig had like 6 turnovers in that game? He threw 4 interceptions, like 3 of them in the red zone as we were about to score. Plus he had like an 80-yard pick 6 go back the other way on him, and we lost 20-0. We should have won that game like 27-17, and we lost it 20-0 because they were all, I mean, it wasn't all Damian's fault. It was that Mississippi State's defense was just in his face and all over him the whole game. And he turned the ball over and over and over again. And I remembered that they beat us, and I remember they shut us out, but I didn't remember why. But we might have been better off putting John Cooley in or something, you know, at quarterback, because Damian just, that was his worst game I think he ever had. Do you remember that?
I remember the defense swarming all over him. I remember it not being pleasant.
Yeah. I didn't remember the details, but
Was man. Jolie Dunn there at the
yes,
time?
Yes. Because after the game, Jolie Dunn said, I think I finally figured out how to stop this offense. And he did, because he had the secondary that could cover our receivers, and we had great receivers on that team, long enough that they could chase Damian around and chase him down. That was Jackie Sherrill's team, but it was Jolie Dunn's defense that won the game. But that's the kind of stuff I'm finding, and the book is going to be full of, is stories like that. So I'm very excited about it. Very excited about it. I saw that a photo surfaced from like that period. Of all times that should come up, must have been the work of Satan, I'm pretty sure.
It was not. It was a picture that my mother had sent me a while ago when she was cleaning out some stuff. A picture of Van and I at a tailgate in '97. So most
Mira thought most that scary. Was the funniest thing she's ever seen in her life. You look great. You look perfectly normal, man. I had on a bad shirt, blue jean shorts, and a goatee.
Yeah, we were in like a rugby shirt and blue jean shorts.
Probably. There's just no telling. It was bad. I don't understand it. That was bad. And
the late 90s.
Was I going to say it was a long time ago. I believe that was your oldest that was in the background, about 2 years old looking.
Yeah. So it may have been 98. I was going back and thinking about it.
That was a bad year, so I forgive anything that happened that year. you find pictures of me at an Auburn game in 03, I'm probably just wearing black because of the way that year was going. All right, so this week we're going to talk about defensive linemen, right? We've been continuing our off-season coverage by looking at some of the greatest players at each position in Auburn history. And this week we are to defensive tackles and defensive ends. That's pretty cool because Auburn, of course, has a storied tradition of turning out great defensive tackles and defensive ends. And so we were going to talk a little bit about who were the best ones. So go ahead and I'd say kick us off, but go ahead and sack us. I don't know. What do you think?
Some of the other positions we've done were, easier to discuss. Number one, it's hard to measure the impact of a good defensive tackle. We know it when we see it, right? Somebody that stuffs the line and that kind of stuff, but they're not always getting credited with tackles. Some of them force turnovers and make big plays. Some of them, get sacks or hurries, quarterback pressures, tackles behind the line, tackle for loss. But a lot of those stats haven't been tracked for a long time. There isn't good data about that kind of stuff. I think at defensive end, Auburn's had a lot of very, very good players, right? And at defensive tackle, Auburn's had, in my mind, kind of three transcendent players and then a bunch of other very, very good players. Mm-hmm. So I think, the three defensive tackles at the top, we should start there because I think it's those three and then everybody else.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
So, those three are, in chronological order, I guess, Tracy Rocker, Nick Fairley, and Derek Brown.
Yeah, no question about it. Those three are program-defining talents. They were unstoppable. They were monsters. They could change a game themselves and did.
Yes, yes.
No doubt about it.
And they did often. They made it happen. They made things happen from a position where that is not normal.
Right, yeah. And then after them, let's look at those three first. All right, so recency bias, people love Derek Brown, and Lord, his last year, 2019, he did demolish, some offenses. The Florida game, it is an absolute crime. And LSU, the Florida and LSU games, he should have single-handedly won those games for us. It was like if 2010 we'd had Nick Fairley, but Barrett Trotter had been the starting quarterback. No offense to Barrett, but it wouldn't have been the same as with Cam Newton. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Derek Brown needed a Cam Newton on the other side of the field for him to give him some help, to give him some points. Because Derek Brown dismantled Florida. He disemboweled Florida. And yet we couldn't score anything and they were able to win. And he terrorized Burrow and LSU. But we didn't score enough points to win. And it just, that eats at me. Nick Fairley, in that one year, in the Oregon game alone, he ate their offensive line alive. And then, of course, in the Alabama game, he caused a fumble, recovered it, took out some Bama players. And then Tracy Rocker had 4 years of being transcendent on the defensive front. His last year probably wasn't as good because he did get such a terrible knee injury against Florida State in 87. He was never quite the same after that. But before that, though, as a true freshman in 85, he was terrorizing the SEC. That tells you anything. So
at a time when freshmen didn't do that. So I think that's a good summary. I think Fairley, if you just talk about one season, Fairley's one season was probably the best, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But I think, Brown and Rocker had longer, more productive careers. Rocker made more tackles. Mm. Some of that is a function of he played more, right, than the other two. And it was a more of a run-heavy time and a less of a pass, crazy time. Brown, I think, was the better kind of run stuffer of all three of them.
Yeah.
Kind of plug up the middle and kind of not let the offense get movement. And I think Fairley of the three of them was the best penetrator. He was the best at getting in the backfield and disrupting.
For a big guy in the middle, which you don't see a whole lot, right? Usually you want your defensive ends who are more athletic. Usually the guys in the middle are there to kind of plug up the holes and just be like, in the way, like a refrigerator type guy. But yeah, that's when you can get a humongous defensive tackle who can actually throw defensive linemen out of the way on his way to the quarterback, that is worth its weight in gold, you know, in anything. That's, yeah, that's, if you've got that, you got a chance against anybody. It's interesting to me that looking at the Auburn record book, am I wrong in saying that among the top 10 total tackles, the only one of the top 10 who is a defensive lineman is Tracy Rocker?
That's right. It's linebackers mm-hmm. and Tracy Rocker.
That says a lot about Tracy Rocker.
Mm-hmm.
He's in there with the freaking linebackers as the most tackles. Same in solo tackles, I think. And probably assisted tackles. Yeah, I mean, everybody else is a linebacker. That's crazy. In quarterback sacks, then we get Quentin Groves and Gerald Robinson. And Gerald Robinson was a defensive lineman in the early 80s, 82 through 85. And I can't ever hear the name Gerald Robinson without hearing the way Jim Fife said it. Because Gerald Robinson would get back there and sack like Alabama's quarterback or Georgia's quarterback. And Jim Fife, God rest him, bless his heart, Jim Fife wouldn't say Gerald Robinson. You know what he'd say, John? He would say, Gerald Robinson! Gerald Robinson! I loved it. I loved how he said, Gerald Robinson! I love it. So Quentin Groves, oh, remember the 04 through 07, the havoc he wreaked. And then Antonio Coleman right around that same time and right after. Then you got Rocker
at 4. One of the biggest plays in the 2010.
Yeah. There you got Tracy Rocker and Craig Ogletree, who's a linebacker again. So, yeah, so Rocker's there at 4th. D Ford was a defensive end on the 13, on the 10 and 13 team. 20 and a half sacks. I mean, D Ford was always, I think, underestimated and lower ranked than he should have been in our history, because he was we didn't realize how big he was on the 2013 team until he was gone in 2014, and that defense took a big step down. Couldn't get any pressure in 14 after what we had in 13. Reggie Torbor, did he move to linebacker or was he defensive end?
I think he played a little both, but mostly defensive end.
Okay. There's Marlon Davidson and Corey Lemonnier.
How about Stanley McClover?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I always wish that Corey Lemonnier had hung around for one more year, because he could have been on the 13 team, and maybe that would have made a difference. Leonardo Carson was a monster in the late 90s. Remember Leonardo Carson going after the LSU quarterback that was so big? LSU had that big guy.
Yeah.
Went to the Raiders.
The guy that went first pick overall.
To the
Russell.
Raiders. Yeah. Oh, Carson just crushed him to the turf. I had that picture on my computer screen for a long time of Leonardo Carson just driving that Russell guy to the turf. And Willie Whitehead, big player on the 90, big leader on that 93-94 team was Willie Whitehead. Terry Bowden leaned on him a lot, and Marcus Washington and Gary Walker, all big names on those early 90s teams. Yeah. Oh, man. All right, who else you want to mention? I was just kind of looking at the quarterback sacks numbers. That brings up a lot of those big names.
All right, so I want to go back to the tackles after the big three, right?
Yeah.
I want to throw some other historical great Auburn defensive tackles. A couple of my favorites, DeMarco McNeil.
Yep.
And Montravius Adams.
Oh, Montravius was great. Number one out there.
But very productive, disruptive. T.J. Jackson. Not as high a ceiling as his other two guys, but solid. Mike Pelton.
Yep.
You know, another solid D-tackle. Benji Rowland. You know, I think it's a little bit lost because he played alongside Rocker.
He was the nose guard on the 87 team with Stallworth and Rocker. And he was also a student in my international relations class in 1994, I think. Because I used to come in and talk about the games we had just played on EA Sports, NFL, or whatever, and he would critique the offense and the defense that I was telling him I was using. So, and you said Gabe Wright.
Gabe Wright, another favorite of mine, another big, productive defensive tackle. And there's a lot of others over time, obviously, at the defensive tackle who are really good. Those are just the ones I thought of the most.
Smith on that 82-83 team went to the show.
Doug Smith,
right? Yeah, he was big.
That was a really good defensive lineman, Doug Smith.
There was a Harold Hallman mm-hmm. in the mid-80s. I'm just trying to think who comes to my mind that we haven't called. I think that's
You think about it. So I think, again, on the defensive ends, I think you got, in my mind, you've got kind of the pure pass rusher types, right? Mm. I would put, your Carl Lawson, D Ford, Gerald Robinson, Marcus Washington, Stanley McClover, kind of in that group, right? Marcus Washington, really good pass rusher.
So good.
And then you're kind of sturdier, stop the run, but also get some pressure at field kind of guys, right? You're Marlon Davidson, a prototype for that. But Leo Carson, Ron Stallworth, I think Antonio Coleman, maybe he's a little more of a pass rusher, but Groves, I think, could do both those things. I think about kind of doing that, the bigger, stronger defensive end thing.
Who was the guy we just had a couple of years ago that did the sensei thing? He was he was our pass rushing defensive end. I'm blanking out.
Holland.
Yeah.
Jeff Holland.
Yeah.
He was a kind of a 1 year wonder guy, but he was great at rushing the passer that year.
Yeah, that 1 year. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, those are good. I'm sure our listeners will suggest several more that we haven't thought of. TJ Jackson, by the way, I was always a big fan of his. I believe he came from Ellic City. I think he played at Benjamin Russell in Alexander City. And that's right down the highway from Sylacauga. That's one of our rivals. And yeah, he was really good there. Very dependable in the middle. What year did he play? I'm trying to think of. He was a Tuberville guy, wasn't he?
I think it was an early Tuberville guy.
Early 2000s. Who was the guy that knocked the ball loose from Mark Ingram in the 2010 Iron Bowl?
That was Coleman, Antonio Coleman. I thought.
I don't think so.
All right, we're Googling this now.
Controversy rocks at you, Wishbone.
Put the sign up.
Yeah, we got to figure this out. So, I'm going to go ahead and start this part while John's looking, and then we'll say the name and finish up. But you got it? John was Googling. That's what you hear the clicking.
Carter.
Antoine Carter.
Antoine Carter.
Was that it?
Yes.
Okay. All right, is that the that seems right.
Controversy rocks at you, Wishbone.
He was from Fort Lauderdale, Dillard, another Dillard pipeline. Yeah, how about that? I'm just putting in, Hustle leads Auburn over Alabama. Auburn's Antoine Carter made a simple choice. Go down. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yeah, I knew it wasn't the one name, but it was close. But yeah, okay. Anything else about the defensive lineman before we move on? That was good.
No, other than if there's somebody else that you feel like we should have mentioned, let us know.
Yeah. Those are good. And honestly, it's always been said that differentiates the SEC from other conferences more than anything else, is having these big 250 to 300 and something pound guys that can run like a running back and chase down offensive players, but are still big and huge. And we have that. And it was so, I just love to think back, it's like at the time, the national championship game, the first one, the 2010 one, at the time, I was watching Cam, of course, and Dyer, and our receivers. But you go back and watch that game now, and to me what stands out is how our defensive front just gave Oregon's offense fits the entire night. They tried things they'd never done all year just to try to find something that would work, and the only thing they ever got to work was just like throwing the bomb and somehow beating our crap secondary that year. No offense to the 2010 secondary, but they did give up a bunch of plays. All right, we don't do ads on the AU Wishbone. We have patrons, and they make all of this spectacularness, that's a new word, possible. If you would like to join their ranks, just go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange button that says Become a Patron, and all will be revealed unto you, and you can join in the fun, join the ranks. I know that probably 95% of our patrons do it just for one reason only. It's because they enjoy our shows. They enjoy listening to us for some unknown reason. They get a kick out of it. Because, John, what we do that very few other shows do is we openly root for Auburn and talk about being Auburn fans, and we don't have any pretense about being neutral journalists covering the team. We're just fans enjoying the team. Is that not fair?
That's fair. We try to look at Auburn objectively and critically,
Yeah.
But we're still fans, and we're going to be fans after we do that. But we sometimes we have to, you know, look at data or have hard conversations because we want to understand why things are better and talk about that.
That's right. But we offer a bunch of stuff that other shows do not and would not and cannot. And in order to do that, we don't even have to
smoke weed every day.
But you get that on this show, too. It's all part of the package. Just go to www.auwishbone.com, click on Become a Patron. One of the things that folks are currently enjoying over there, and I'm going to read off all of our patrons in just a second. One of the things folks are enjoying is our Fantasy Formula One League, because several of us are big Formula One racing fans, and so you can join up and make up to two teams of drivers and teams and put them together and compete. And our current standings in first place right now after four races, we got the Monaco Grand Prix coming up this coming Sunday, which will be fun. It's basically a parade. They don't pass. Whoever gets the pole is going to win unless a car blows up, which could happen. But our current top five in first place, as usual, is Mira with Del Taco Racing. In second place is me with Blue Tiger Racing, kind of like Red Bull, Blue Tiger. In third place, we have a new third place entry this week. Jared with his GTG Guess the Game Racing team up in third place. So way to go, Jared. This is his rookie year having his own Formula One team, and he's in third place. In fourth place is Richard Stevens with RAS's Racers. Way to go, Richard, all up in fourth place. And in fifth place is Rob Morgan with his Vesper team. So that's our current top five. You can join in. Just go to www.auwishbone.com, click on the link. Our current patrons who are doing so much to keep the lights on in the fabulous White Rocket Studios for the AU Wishbone and other shows include Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore. We have Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, a.k.a. UFanKSC, Logan Chilton, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trewick and Susan Trewick, Trombone Tiger, yeah, sound effect for that, Willie Carden, Ann Kanjian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE Richie. We got to get better at celebrating. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner is back, Chris the Hilton is still there, Colby Butler. And I didn't push the button fast enough. And then I have to watch the little thing go round and round. This is exciting radio. I know you're all excited as the little thing goes round and round. Danny Flack, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, any time now would be good. Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tigers Still Lives, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrick, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, and finally, as the little thing goes round and round again, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. Thank you guys so much. I mean, the fact that I read that entire list in my wacky way every episode shows how important you guys are. And please hang around, and we need more because we got our big fall road trip coming up, and we're going to need all the support we can get to give you some good video as well as some good audio. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And now it's time for our new favorite segment, John. It's everybody's new favorite segment. You ready for Jared's Guess the Game?
Bring it on.
Here we go. Who can it be
now? Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game, episode 13. We got a send-in for this one. In fact, I got a few send-ins, so it's going to be send-ins for the next several weeks. This one is from JNull4 on Twitter, and JNull wants to know what you make of this.
Football. If it goes through the end zone.
Either way. Yep, touchback.
Touchback, yes.
That was punched from behind, too.
Ooh, I think you guys might have this one, but we'll see. Discuss amongst yourselves, and I'll see you in the hint file.
Could that have possibly been the play we were just talking about 5 minutes ago, John?
It could be. Because the crowd noise was huge.
Yeah. I can think of two or three times that that the ball has been fumbled and then, you know, gone into the end zone and people trying to jump on it. But that sounded like, but they didn't say Antoine Carter. You want to hear it again? I can skip to the relevant part.
It could have. It's back up. Okay. That was
Vern.
Vern Aguirre. So it was a CBS game.
Yeah. That's
from that time period.
Yeah.
If it wasn't that game, it was something in that direction, right?
Yeah. Big game, CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Let me hit the voices again.
Twitter, and Jay Null wants to know what you make of this.
Football. If it goes through the end zone.
Either way. Yep, touchback.
Touchback, yes.
That was punched from behind, too.
Ooh, I think you got.
Punched from behind. I think it's Antoine Carter on Mark
Ingram. I think it's the Antoine Carter Ingram play. I think what he said in that beginning part where it was all bleeped out was Ingram fumbles.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
something along those lines. Yeah. All right. Let's get the. I'm ready to go with that. But let's see what the hint file says. Right. If it says Mark Ingram or Antoine Carter or anything to that effect, we know we're right. But yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
Here we are in the hint file, so we will take the bleep away, and here we go.
Ingram. Fumble. If it goes through the end zone.
Either way. Yep, touchback.
Touchback, yes.
That was punched from behind, too.
You have to know it by now. Yeah. You have to. What you got?
Yeah, that was the seeing eye.
Well, but it's weird that we a little bit cheated because we couldn't remember Antoine Carter's name and we looked it up before when we were doing the defensive end rankings. So.
I don't listen to these things when he sends them in. I've told him, I said, if you just put like porn on there, that's going to go out to our listeners because I don't listen to them because I don't want to spoil it, you know? When you hear it is when I hear it. I just trust Jared to give us a good file.
No, but it's just funny because we wouldn't have been doing that if we weren't having the defensive end conversation.
That's exactly. So. It's just one of those flukes. It just worked out that way. All right, let's go ahead and let Jared reveal the answer that we already know we've got. But we didn't do anything wrong. It just kind of worked out that way.
No, it did. It worked out.
All right, if you guess it, this was the Iron Bowl, Auburn versus Alabama in 2010. You are correct, and I agree. With Jay Null, his recommendation said this was a very pivotal play wasn't big in the moment. You can actually kind of hear the lack of enthusiasm. Of course, it's Gary, so take from that what you will. But there, it's, you know, kind of banal. Alabama's way up on points, and it was a good play, but it didn't look like it was going to change everything. But it did. Anyway. I am Jared Albrick. I'm at Yard Sale Artist. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a suggestion for Guess the Game, go ahead and send them in. Like I said, I've got a few, so we'll be suggestions only for the next couple weeks. So back to you, Van and John, and War Eagle.
Yeah, great. Another great job. Jared does a good job putting those together. And I know from, you know, all the audio work I do, it takes a little while to sit down and put them all together, even after you got the idea. And you have to go find it, and then you got to put it together and then bleep it and all that. So I'm sure he puts a good bit of work into it every week. That was good.
Thank you for the listeners who suggest this place.
Oh, absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And that was a good one. It just kind of, the timing was, we had that on our mind, so it worked out the way it did. I'm going to be getting, I'll be getting a text from Jared tomorrow afternoon, like, dang it. All right. Well, I think, I've lost the soundboard, John. Where did it go? Oh, there it is. I think.
You have failed me for the last time.
I think that British guy is about to yell.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. And you can hear Mira how she sounds now at the end of this show as compared to how she sounded like 8 years ago. What do we got, if anything?
All right. Our first email this evening is from Cato the Barner.
Hey.
And he begins and says, it's the last time I'm banging the war drum, and then I'll stop because I know you are tired of hearing me talk about it. I just want to recap every single game that we played in the SEC softball tournament. We put one run on the absolute worst pitching core in the entire SEC. Mm. They scored their first two runs having zero hits, and we had to pull our pitcher with zero outs in the second inning. We got one hit in the last six innings of the game. Mm. That's how we fared against the 13 seed South Carolina Gamecocks.
Mm.
The scandal happened in 2017. This is 2021. The scandal excuse has sailed. If a scandal happens at a school, you would expect the team to take a major step back and then improve over time. Instead, we took our major step back and then you to continue to regress year over year afterwards. That's not scandal. That's coaching. Okay, I'm done venting. I'm done talking softball. Carry on, gentlemen. Cato the whiner.
No, that's not whining. That's just pointing out that they've got serious, serious problems. And that's worse than I knew. But that's, they got to do something.
Well, and then he showed the run differential, which, again, is the difference between runs scored and runs allowed. Mm. And in the, like, between, like, the third best and 12th best SEC team, there was a 57-run difference. So the teams are pretty closely clustered together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between that 12th team and the 13th team, which was Auburn, there was an 86-run differential.
Good.
So
night.
Auburn was so far behind the rest of the SEC in run differential that it was gigantic. It's a
wow,
a dramatic visual. So
that's horrific. That's shambolic.
Yeah, oof. But it's Nicky Dean gonna get some hot seat after this. All right, our next question comes from a friend of the podcast, Auburn Elvis.
Yes. Dun 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 dun. Yes.
All right, we're not gonna have sound effects anymore. Van's just gonna do them.
I can't find it right now. Go ahead.
All right. So, dear John and Van, we all love the idea of the SEC pod system, but no one has mentioned its glaring Achilles heel. Under a pod system, it is mathematically possible for three SEC teams to finish the regular season with perfect records. And as sure as an injured Georgia running back recovered in time for the Auburn game, there will eventually be a pod system with three perfect SEC teams. So my question for you is a simple one. How will Auburn get screwed in that scenario?
That is the first thing I thought. As soon as you quoted him saying there'll be three, I'm like, and guess who'll be the third, right? Guess who's on the outside looking in? And they'll have every excuse. It guaranteed it. That's absolutely right. That's 100% right.
The two other undefeated teams will go to, SEC teams will go to the playoff, and Auburn will not.
Right.
Because they wouldn't want to take three. That'll be the
– that's exactly – that is 100%. I've said all along, I said there's only been one cosmic entity. And I mean like, you know, when you talk about cosmic entities, you're talking about Galactus, the Celestials, the Living Tribunal. I kind of went out left field for that one. You're talking about Odin, right? Zeus, the Watchers, okay? Super beings so powerful they can reshape the universe around them. There's only been one of those powerful enough to overcome all of the snake bit obstacles that always get in Auburn's way. And that galactic celestial being's name was Cameron Newton. He's the only one powerful enough to bulldoze right through every roadblock. And if you think back to 2010, there were some roadblocks, John.
That's true.
And he plowed right through every one of them with a smile on his face. And so, yeah, without him, unless he's like the athletic director by that point or something, then, yeah, we'll be the third team. There's no question about it. Elvis is 100% right.
I'd like to thank Auburn Elvis, the paragon of doom there in that.
Oh, all right.
The foretelling.
Because, as we all know about Auburn getting screwed over by destiny and fate.
It occurs.
Yes. Yes, it does.
All right.
Because in the SEC.
But here, there are no civilized rules. I have business in the East.
Yeah, SEC East, because it sucks. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
We're back to the movie quotes, people. So I just.
Yeah, Elvis actually tweeted me and said, all right, we're done with the Kingdom of Heaven quotes. And I said, no, the reason I keep doing them, and the little gif, God wills it, God wills it, God wills it. God wills it.
So that's it for listener questions. Last week we had a great response. This week a little bit lighter. We're going to challenge the listeners. Got to get back up. Got to get back up. Come back. I know it's off season, but you know, you got to come back with something else.
I want to put the call out for the tail end of the show, you know, like we used to do with Brandon when he was on all the time. Any Marvel, DC, movie, comics related questions, I know John will happily entertain them. We can tack that on at the end, and the rest of you can go ahead and tune out if you're not interested because you'll have heard everything else. So I, for one, would welcome any questions along those lines that you have to ask. I'm looking forward, for example, to Kang coming along maybe soon. We have the Loki series coming up on Disney Channel in June. Very excited about that. He's going to be having a run-in with the TVA, which, of course, is the Tennessee Valley Authority. Perhaps he's going to be trying to blow up dams on the...
You don't mess with the Tennessee Valley.
No. FDR, man, from beyond the grave will smite you down. Smite you. Smite you down. All right. I don't think we have it around the SEC much we haven't already covered, but... I guess our only update is we still feel like we're good about the road game road trip. We have a sense of which game it would be if it can happen. And
I think the other news is, again, just, you know, great news for America this week with the mask being made to be lifted for vaccinated people. And, you know, even before that, the Auburn's athletic director said, you know, he anticipates full stadium. And I think that's what we're going to see everywhere. So it's exciting.
That is. Yeah, man. I was very excited when the mask mandate thing went away. That's I was all excited, and somebody said to me, I don't see any reason for glee here. And I'm like, I see every reason for glee, because I said, I've been doing this diligently. I've been doing it diligently all the time, you know. But that doesn't mean I enjoyed it, and that doesn't mean I'm not going to be excited when I don't have to do it anymore, because I can't breathe. I have a hard time with asthma and everything. All right. I think that's going to get us to the end. I guess we'll have more we'll have some updates on the road game road trip as we get closer to it, start sort of nailing things down. I am starting to look for technology and equipment, though, so we are making progress because we want to do a good job. We want to provide you guys with a good product when it is over, both in terms of podcast content and maybe the YouTube channel content. So hopefully we'll be able to do that. I anticipate a lot of editing that I'm going to be doing in the months to come, but we'll see. All right, any last thoughts, John?
You know what? It's May. It's a beautiful time of the year. Get out there and enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm planning on getting now that the semester's almost over, I'm planning on getting the hammock back out there and getting the iPad out there and getting some writing done on the iPad lying out in the sun instead of down here in the gloomy basement where I've been for the last 6-7 months. So that'll be nice.
I like it.
All right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone.
find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.